Winchester AA target loads have long been the standard of performance in shotgun sports. Available in over 50 different load specs, the AA line is known for its 6% antimony shot, reloadable hull, clean burning propellant, and of course, the famous AA wad. Winchester AA, it's the choice of champions.
You are now tuned into Shotgun Sports USA, powered by Winchester. Recorded in the U.S. and streaming all over the world, we talk to shotgun shooters from all disciplines, championship-winning coaches, gun clubs, world-class target setters, vendors, and industry-leading companies that fuel the sport. If you are into clay target sports, you are at the right place for insider information from some of the best in the world every single week. Remember to subscribe to our podcast, leave us a review, and connect with us on social media. You can also catch our episodes on ShotgunSportsUSA.com.
My guest today grew up with a shotgun in his hand and competed all over the U.S. in sporting clays competitions and the PSCA before entering the AMU just 5 years ago. He is a shooter, an instructor, and now competes all over the world in bunker trap. Please welcome to the show, Will Hinton. What's going on, Will?
Nothing much. How are you, Justin?
Good. Willie Nation is what...
That's right.
That's what they call you. Give me the nicknames. What are the nicknames they call you?
So, nicknames in the past have been Willie Nation. That started when I was a sporting clay shooter, and I want to say that Zach Keenbaum gave me that name. But at the time, you know, I was traveling, myself, Matt Fisher, occasionally Kevin, but with Zach and everybody, we would travel everywhere, and so we were nationwide, like ZZ Top. So Willie Nation came to be, and then kind of just dropped it to Willie these days.
Yeah, that's good. I hadn't had you on this podcast yet with me. It's good to have you on.
No, I appreciate you inviting me. Hopefully I got some good information that people can get some things out of.
Yeah, a little different perspective from someone in the Army. So right. I've seen you've been hunting. I've seen you've been cooking chili. Tell me what you've been doing.
I have. So recently I have grew up and started trying to get into a lot more hunting, but especially out west hunting. I didn't have a trip planned this year, although I did go to Alaska with a great guy named Ed Gore. Did some salmon fishing, hunted some black bears. Killed an elk last year. You know, the first time I ever went elk hunting. Mm-hmm. I have to plug in there, public land, unguided. And then actually yesterday, what you saw, I was cooking 20 gallons of Brunswick stew, myself and a coworker, Derek Haldeman. So just hunting, cooking, surviving, just like everybody these days.
All right. So the picture, you were stirring like a giant boat paddle.
That is correct. So that is custom made. Myself and Derek Haldeman used a belt sander and a table saw and then had to drill holes in the bottom of it. So that is our stir paddle for our 20 gallons of stew.
What do you need 20 gallons of Brunswick stew for?
Well, have you seen how... I'm a big boy, Justin.
No, not anymore. Not anymore.
Not anymore, but I'm still big. I still have the appetite. So we eat some, we freeze some, you know, give some to coworkers and stuff like that. So can you really ever have enough food?
No, you asking me? No.
Yeah, exactly.
See? I like talking to you because you've been there before. You know what I mean? You know what it's like to be a big, hungry dude.
Oh, no, trust me, yes. No, I didn't know where you were going with that, but yes, I've been there, and I'm always there.
All right, for some people listening, they might not know who you are, but you grew up shooting. You shot sporting clays at a very competitive level, and when you got old enough to join the Army, you went into the Army Marksmanship Unit. So tell people what your job is and how you got there.
So, as you mentioned, I grew up shooting. I was a sporting clay shooter for approximately 10 to 12 years, and then I did join the Army at a young age. I was 20 years old when I joined the Army. I had to lose a little bit of weight first, so I actually lost 100 pounds for wellness, but also to join the Army, because they have a standard for that. But now I am a member of the Army Marksmanship Unit. I'm on the International Trap Team, and I'm a bunker trap shooter.
to lose the weight? You went to go join the Army and they said, look, you're too big. You need to lose 100 pounds.
I did. I was approached by who just retired, the former team chief of Shotgun. He was an international skeet athlete, Mark Weeks. You know, I talked to him because he was actually heavily involved with the PSCA and approached me about joining the Army. And I was like, I did not come from an Army family. And I thought, you know, that'd be a good opportunity. At a minimum, I'll do one enlistment, see how I like it, and then adjust fire from there. But I actually, you know, I got excited about it and you kind of gave me a goal. And I actually did. I actually ended up, you know, started working out, changed my lifestyle, lost 100 pounds and went to basic training, which was quite the treat. And then got out and became a member of the Army Marksmanship Unit.
Yeah. Well, good. So you've been in the AMU now for 5 years. Are you still enjoying it as much as you thought you would when you got in?
You know, my answer would be yes, because even though it seems like, you know, I guess the word would be a stagnant job, like you're always doing the same thing, you're shooting. But to be honest, it is ever and constantly evolving. You know, I'm a bunker trap shooter now, so the goal is to train and perform at the highest level at selection matches. Then once you win or place in a certain position at a selection match, you know, you can make teams to travel. But the highlight of the AMU, aside from just shooting and competing, is the people, because you're in a huge melting pot, because the Army is the greatest social experiment. People don't realize that, but it is. And especially in a room, you know, I can say some names. I've had, you know, my good friend Derek Haldeman, we have Glenn Eller, Jeff Holguin, you know, Glenn, Jeff, Olympians, and then we have Philip Youngman, who's a skeet shooter Olympian this year. So you get to have all those insights and the different mentalities when it comes to shooting, and you can converse with those people, basically pick their brains and kind of see how they operate. And it's a very high performance, I would say, office. That's what we are. We are an office.
Yeah. So tell me what a day at work's like for you. What do you do every day?
A day at work, it evolves. So one, it depends on kind of what the Army has planned for you that day. But in general, our job title is shooter instructors. So we fall more into the shooter part. So our job is to get there in the morning. Most people work out in the morning, do cardio, and then we'll show up and then we shoot and we train pretty much all day until around three. People go home, they'll either lift or work out again. But all day kind of revolves around shooting, talking about shooting, future trips, past trips. I mean, you're always kind of picking each other's mind and shooting together, figuring out, you know, how can you get better or what do you need to be doing to get better.
I wasn't going to ask this question, but it made me want to ask it. How does someone get to where you're at in the AMU that is a shooter and may want to do that?
So I will say I get this question a lot myself, as well as anybody in the AMU, I would feel like. But the biggest thing is to put yourself out there. You know, I didn't find out about the AMU and then immediately sought them out. They approach me, and it's kind of that scenario with a lot of the teams, but we do have service teams for people in the Army. You know, you could contact the AMU about that side for tryouts, but I was approached by them because I shot various disciplines growing up. I dabbled in the international games, which is bunker trap and international skeet. And I got to see those guys. I got to see them win. I got to see them out there competing. And, you know, everybody thinks we're scary, but we're the friendliest people you'll meet. And you can actually go up and talk to those guys and find interest. But if you go out there and you shoot and you're performing well and you're kind of drawing attention to yourself, they will find you. I found that's how it works. And now being in the position of in the AMU, if you're a good shooter and you're out there and you're competing, either you're competing with us or we already know who you are.
Really? That's interesting.
Yeah, so that's what a lot of people don't think about. They just want to join and try out. But we are a high-performance place, so you got to think about that. Well, I want to shoot bunker. Well, my best advice is to go to a bunker trap shoot or a tournament or a match, these selection matches, and let us see you, you know, go out there and, you know, kind of win and put yourself on the map.
Yeah, how many people are in the AMU?
So do not quote me on this, but I want to say we have somewhere around 80 soldiers. I mean, that could be an inaccurate number, but it's around that. We have seven different sections or teams, you want to call them. And each of them have a specialty in a certain job, what they do. So in my office specifically, I think we have 14 shooters and then a boss, team chief.
Okay. That's interesting. It sounds fun. Like if you like to shoot, that's the job to have.
It is fun. Basic training was not fun, but being in the office and being on the trap team of the AMU, it is very fun. It's one of the best jobs I think you could ever have.
Well, I was going to ask you about your practice routine, and I was going to say, you know, is that your job, or is this something that you do when you feel like you need to do it? you know, as far as practice.
That's where the difference comes up between what you have to learn. Because there was a huge learning curve to where you're a good shooter and you just practice when you feel like it. And then there's a whole nother atmosphere of you don't want to win, you're expected to win. And so that whole practicing, and you know, we refer to it, and I refer to it as training now, because that's what it is. Everything deals with basically peaking at a certain time before a match. It depends on what kind of training cycle you're on. Are you shooting, you know, high volume in the beginning of the year? Are you tapering off to kind of really run like a match routine, is what we'd call it? And so you're exercising all these different training tactics throughout the year. So it's not really just go out there every day. Like when I was a civilian, you know, I would show up, I shot maybe 1 or 2 days a week, shoot a tournament, shoot. I'm like, well, shot good, shot bad. Well, when you actually break down your specific game and you see that, okay, well, now I'm trending this way or I'm trending that way, I mean, shooting poorly or badly, what do I need to be focusing on? What do I need to pull out from my game and enhance? So you actually break everything down and take a really acute approach to it. That sounds like a lot, but it is true.
All right. So how much do you practice, and tell me how many shells you shoot a month?
Oh, so that varies. Myself specifically, getting ready, we actually have a shoot coming up, but getting ready for that, I'm shooting 3 to 4 good quality rounds a day. A round is 25 targets. You get 2 shots at every target. So right now I'm probably shooting 100 to 125 shots a day. And what I'm doing is I'm running a solid match routine, trying to basically emulate myself being in competition.
Yeah.
At the beginning of the year, and especially when I first got in the Army, I would burn it down. I had some 1,000-shell days, which I don't care who you are, what you say. If you shoot 1,000 shells every day, there will come a certain amount of days, and it's not a lot, to where you will start hurting and you will not reap the benefits.
Yeah.
So out of a given week or a given month?
Month.
Given month. I would say I shoot anywhere between 100 to 250 shells a day, and that's 5 days a week.
Yeah.
That's, so you're going to have to do math. I'm in the Army.
You didn't get in the Army to do math, did you? You got there to shoot guns.
Got there to shoot.
You know, I was doing some research on the AMU and found out that in 1956, President Eisenhower authorized the formation of the Army Marksmanship Unit exclusively just to win competitions and to raise the standards of marksmanship throughout the Army.
So, first comment, you have done your homework. But secondly, that is exactly right. So, Eisenhower authorized the AMU to basically put marksmanship for the USA on a world stage and defeat the Soviets. Because before then, the Soviets had, I guess you would say, the premier or the top shooting program. So Eisenhower implemented the AMU to kind of do a mixture of things. Initially, it was to start and have basically marksmanship for the USA put on the map. But now it's kind of evolved to where, one, that is still a thing, but two, research and development and basically weapon enhancements. And so there's kind of a cluster of things that the AMU is kind of involved. It's a really, really interesting and neat place because people think there's just shooting that goes on. Yeah. And that is the main component. But when you start looking at basically the research and development that goes behind it, increasing basically soldiers' marksmanship capabilities, that was kind of the whole reason why they did that. And it's kind of did nothing but flourish.
Yeah. They also have, I guess, sections. They have 5 different shooting sections, which is they have each of them have like a world-class training facility and competition shooting grounds. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. They have what? Service rifle, action shooting, international rifle, service pistol, and of course, shotgun.
Right. So there's 2 in there that don't get mentioned often, but they're probably some of the 2 most important. So to recap on that, we have service rifle, which basically is M4, M16 style service rifle shooting is what that's called. Mm-hmm. I'm not terribly versed on that sport, but I'm going to say they're the best rifle shooters that I've ever seen. And then moving on to 3 guns or action shooting team. So basically that's a 3-gun team. And then we have some action pistol shooters within that. Those guys, all of them look twice as good as John Wick. They're some of the fastest, most accurate shooters with basically all 3 guns. You have international rifle, which for people that don't know, that's small bore. They can shoot large rifle, but generally it's small bore 22 or pellet rifles is what that is. And they are incredibly good. Basically, they're the ones who get in the suits and are extremely still and actually just sit there and stack shot after shot after shot.
Yeah.
Service pistol, similar to service rifle, but they shoot basically service guns, which, you know, is a Beretta M9. Now you have, I think, a SIG M17. They also shoot at Camp Perry. That's how you get distinguished badges, service pistol and service rifle. And then you have shotgun, which you know what I do. I'm involved in Olympic clay target sports. But two teams that don't get mentioned, we actually have a custom firearm shop who basically build and enhance guns to where they can shoot their full potential, more accurate shot. As far as shotguns go, they can tweak and gunsmith things. And then we actually have one more group, which is people don't know about. It's called Instructor Training Group. So what that team does, they actually come back and take information from what the competition teams learn through shooting and how to get better and stuff. And they can actually go out and they can teach the Army as a whole or the whole force. And so what they do is their job basically is to increase lethality. That's called Instructor Training Group. So there's seven groups, but only five are really active shooter groups.
Yeah,
so I shouldn't say that. Five are shooting competition teams.
Being a brand name in the clay target industry, Rick Hemingway has said, "Have you ever noticed almost all major sporting events are being run by Pro-Matic traps?" Think about that statement for a minute. He's right, and you may want to consider that before making your next purchase. Rick is the largest Pro-Matic dealer specializing in individual and commercial trap sales. Rick provides skeet, trap, five stamp, and sporting clays, designs, installs, and service. He also offers accessories such as solar panels, wireless release systems, as well as the hottest item on the market, the Claybot by Rainier Products. Visit www.backwoodsquailclub.com or give him a call at 843-546-1466.
So do you interact or work with any of these other people in these on these teams?
I do. So you actually see a lot of them as a whole. We actually had an office Christmas party yesterday, but you do. So I will go to the shop occasionally, or we'll go around and mingle with other teams and see each other, because we all do very different shooting sports. And it's very insightful for me because I've been a shotgun shooter my whole life. So I might go talk to the service rifle teams, you know, if I want to go, and I did do this, you know, I wanted to go elk hunting. I was talking about calibers and about bullets, and the knowledge that all the teams have from me just having a shotgun background, it's incredible. So we do talk to teams a lot. Granted, we've had COVID, but generally, you know, we'll get together, do some dinner parties and stuff like that, or even during the day, come over and we'll try different disciplines. People come to shotgun, they want to shoot shotguns all day and vice versa.
So are those guys just as good on a shotgun as they are the other guns or not?
Well, that whole moving and not looking at the front sight post or the end of the barrel still gets them. Yeah. Some of them, yes, they're actually wing shooters in their spare time. But all of them are very different, because aside from shotgun, every team basically is taught iron sights, front sight post, good trigger squeeze. When you explain, you're looking at a target the whole time and you're not looking at the barrel, and then you slap the trigger, it's kind of foreign. They don't like that.
Yeah. So you being a part of the AMU, what doors has it opened up for you?
So me being a part of the AMU and involved with the AMU has actually opened a lot of doors. I've met some really interesting people that I had no idea existed, as silly as that sounds. So I'm just going to throw some names out. So Lance Bade, international bunker trap Olympian. You have Todd Graves, actually won a World Cup medal in all three disciplines. And there's tons other that I could name, but these are actually shotgun shooters that I had no idea who they were or even existed, because I come from a sporting clays background. Well, being in the AMU as a bunker trap shooter, I get to meet all these international shooting athletes that I really didn't know about or didn't know existed. And these are some of the best gun pointers I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. So aside from that, and just, so that's the shooting part of it. And the other part is the outreach. So when you're in the Army, you kind of have a different influence and people view you differently. And so the people you get to talk to about your experience in the Army, you know, kind of what the Army has done for you, and you can kind of explain that process to people, well, it kind of gives them insight, because growing up, I knew nothing of the Army. I didn't talk to anybody in the Army. The most I learned about the Army was when I saw the Army shooters. So it's opened a lot of opportunities as far as engaging with people that I would never think I would, you know, that approach me, but also some of the coolest people I have met have been in the Army or through the Army.
So everyone you work with in the AMU right now, I think I've met a few of these guys. Are they still there with you? I don't remember their
names. Yes, they should be.
Yeah. And is everybody doing good, winning what they want to win? Or
everybody's doing good. We're all training hard right now. I said, we have a match coming up, but everybody's doing good. One of my good friends, Derek Haldeman, he's the one who helped me cook the Brunswick stew yesterday.
Yeah.
But everybody's doing good. Everybody's training hard. We actually just came back from a training trip in Tucson, Arizona. We were actually with their – well, Derek Mine was out there with us.
Oh, Derek. So let's talk about that. What do you have going on right now?
So we are getting ready for the, it's called 2022 winter selection. So basically that is our first selection match that we've had in really 2 years that will decide the upcoming World Cups. I think there's a World Cup, maybe it's a Grand Prix in Morocco, and then four others. I want to say South Korea. Don't quote me on this. I'd have to check. But basically that is a selection match that we have to go there and perform and earn a certain spot, say first through third, to be put on a travel team. At that point, USA Shooting will take us as the athletes, and we will go shoot for the U.S. at World Cups internationally.
Yeah. How do you prepare for a World Cup?
So I would have to say it kind of goes back in with training. So to prepare for a World Cup, what some people like to do, you know, I have a coworker named Seth Inman who actually look at the range. But what's nice also is you can actually talk to the fellow shooters, because a lot of them have traveled to these ranges before. I can tell you about the background, target speeds, perception, all that. But really the biggest thing, and this is just myself speaking, that I'd say you want to have your match routine ready to go. So when you're shooting, what that means is you basically want to have very sound fundamentals, the correct mentality going forward. You just want to be very, I'm trying to think of the best word to describe it, but very solid as a shooter before a World Cup.
Yeah. Now, the selection match, I've heard this from several people that I've talked to. How does it work? And I guess the selection process is to get on the World Cup team, correct?
Yes. So the selection process is basically you are going to a match, you are shooting, and those matches can be one part, two part, or sometimes even three part. So what they're doing is they're taking a combined whole of target shot between all these shooting and all these shooting athletes and competitors, and whoever rises and whoever, say, top three or at the very top, that is who will make the travel team to go to these World Cups. So the current selection process, it's one part. So in January, we will shoot a course of fire, and it's going to be 250 targets. After those 250 targets, they'll take, I want to say they're doing this final, they will take the top six shooters and have a final. So then you will shoot 50 bunker trap targets with one shot. So they're called single barrels. Then from that, that score will be added on to your qualification score. So basically, it's a selection process to earn travel slots for World Cups, World Championship, Pan American, ultimately Olympic team games.
How many people are at these selection matches?
It varies, but anywhere between, I would say, I think sometimes on trap we've had about 200 down to 100. Depends if they cut the numbers where they say only take top 40 athletes because those are the ones who are potential to make that team. Mm-hmm. So it totally varies. Tucson in January, I don't know what the weather's going to be like. Maybe cold. I couldn't even tell you, but I would say somewhere very easy over 100.
All right. So tell me what a good score is on bunker trap.
Okay. That like a lot of questions, that varies. But I would say 240 and above. So that is missing 10 targets out of 250. That means you shot a 120 on the first and second half because you shoot 125 targets for a qualification. Anything above 120 is deemed world class. Obviously, you want to break as many as you can, but you want to be hunting 240 or above.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So if you're shooting 240, you're probably going to make it.
Yes. Probably. But then you have a final on top of that. That's another added bonus.
All right. How does that work?
So final, once you've shot your qualification, say me and you shot, Justin, yep. And you're saying, I am the king guy. I just shot a 240. I'm ahead of Will. Well, we would actually shoot an additional 50 targets with one shell in.
Gotcha. Okay.
And so then at the end of that, that kind of decides and sways the outcome a little bit.
Do you normally hit one on one shell or does it take two?
No, for the main part, I mean, I've had rounds to where I've shot 25 to 25 single shots. And I've had rounds where I've only had, say, 18, 17 first barrels and had to use my second barrel.
Yeah.
But in general, people are over 20 with their single barrel average shooting around a bunker trap. The issue is when you go into a final, mental pressure sets in and you realize you do not have a second shell. That's where stuff starts to get real and bad things set in.
Yeah. So you've shot sporting at a high level and now bunker trap. What are the differences that you see in trying to prepare to be the best in sporting versus trying to be the best in trap?
So it took me a long time to learn this, and I'm still learning it. They're totally different animals. Sporting clays, there are don't take my word for this. There's five regionals, four regionals, and they say a U.S. Open and a Nationals. Mm-hmm. You have multiple shooting events. You have multiple championships happening, and then you have multiple events on top of that. You know, mm-hmm. if say you shot FITAS, you shot poorly. Well, okay, I'm gonna try to win the main event and finish good Sunday. So there's so much stuff. Whereas in international trap, you roll up to a tournament and you have 250 targets, and there's one match. There's one event. And so it's a different form of pressure and a different form of competing, because in sporting clays, you know, and this is just my opinion, you've got to compete often. You got to shoot, you got to travel, and you were actually competing very often. When the international games, it's totally different. You spend majority of the time honing your match fundamentals and your skills and how you can perform and shoot the best. And then you get to go just prove it and show it all at one point. You get one shot at it. So that's the biggest thing. And I would say to get good at it, you have to basically switch gears. That was the hardest thing for me, is learning how to train. I never trained as a sporting clay shooter. My job was to go to matches, or say sporting clay competitions, shoot as well as I could, and then just see how the dice landed after that. Obviously, I practiced and I prepared and I wanted to win, but I knew if I didn't win that, there was going to be, say, a shoot next week, or I had a different event within that shooting championship. Whereas in bunker trap, you get one shot at it. And that's been the hardest thing, knowing that you have to train singularly for that one event and have everything going for you, and then show up there and just turn it on.
So you're saying it's probably harder to shoot trap competitively versus shooting.
I'm going to get judged for this, and I know I'm going to get feedback.
That's why I asked you.
But yes, no, I will have to say that having shot both, and again, at this point, I'm not Olympian. I have never won the NSCA Nationals. I would like to think I'm a good shooter. But bunker trap has proved to be a more difficult game to shoot. You know, Derek shot it. Derek made the Olympic team. Anthony Matarese shot it in the past. It's not an easy game. And I live the game, so I would know that. It's not an easy game. People could describe it as different. I wouldn't say it's absolutely not. I'd say they're equally hard. But I think shooting bunker and competing in bunker full-time is more difficult.
Yeah. So you're talking about adjustments and having to get used to shooting things. What's the biggest adjustment that you've had to make?
I would say what I mentioned earlier, having to learn how to train has been the biggest adjustment, because I came from somewhere, every weekend you had a small sporting clay tournament. Well, you're out there, you're competing. So without realizing it, you're out there shooting for something and going how through your routine is how you would win a competition. Well, in international games, there's not that many competitions. On a world level, there's a ton, but you have to get there. So basically running your routine and learning how to train appropriately. Do you need to be shooting quality rounds? Do you need to isolate one part of your game, whether it's being still or connecting to the target immediately? You know, there's a lot of different things, and you basically have to look inward as a shooter and know your game. You have to understand your game so well that you can break down certain parts and train those, or else you're just going out there and shooting and shooting and shooting. You know, if you're going out, because I've been guilty of that. I've went out there and just shot and gone through the motions versus out there having quality training and a goal.
Yeah. So growing in the sport, okay, how have you grown, and what have you done to better yourself to be the best you can be?
It's funny you ask that. I have actually did a lot of that this year. One, it starts with a lot of reflecting, and reflecting only comes from two things. But one thing is losing, eating a lot of loser sandwiches. I've did a lot of stuff. You know, I've started to journal and write down a lot more of my shooting than I ever did in the past, because when it's good, you know, everybody knows there's nothing better than everything going good, but it's when it doesn't. So I've actually been reading a lot of books, been listening to a lot of podcasts to not tell me how I should be shooting or how I should win, but basically get me thinking in a certain mindset and evaluating my game so I can reach the next level.
What have you learned by the books or the podcast? I mean, give me some examples.
So I can be specific here and drop you some stuff that it was like dropping a hammer on me. Okay. I listened to two podcasts. I listen to a lot of podcasts, but two. One is called Real AF with Andy Frisella. It's a really good podcast. It's got a little explicit language. I guess that's how you say it. Yeah. The other one is Peak Mental Performance Daily by Brian Kane. Very short, but very insightful. And basically, you know, every day you should have a goal. If you're an athlete and you're out there shooting, you should have a goal. But one of the biggest things that hit home, it's actually a coworker gave me this book. And it was called Winning by Brian Kane. And I don't endorse these books or anything. I paid for all this stuff. But it was one sentence and it stood out so well. and it was, how would you describe winning? And I thought to myself, and like, I'm going to ask you, so Justin, how would you describe winning?
I would describe winning as being successful at the, what I'm doing.
Right. Yep. So not that long of an explanation, you know, successful, on top, gold medal, you know, my word I actually said was domination. And I thought that was fitting because that's what you want to do. Well, then I read the very next sentence in the book because it told you to look up and think about it. And I was like, okay. And it said, if your word was podium, gold medal, money, success, and then the last word was domination, it was like, you're not ready for this. And I was like, what? It just completely blew my mind. And it got me thinking. And so what's so great about that book, it's a very raw approach, and it talks about winning how it really is. And it was like, winning is 90% failure. It's about shortcomings. It's about basically mental terrorism of doing the same thing over and over and trying to get different results, which is insanity. And so it really puts it in perspective of what winning is, because you can only win one time. In the next event, you got to go win again. And it talks about approaching winning from what it really is. It's, you know, it's not what everybody sees you when you're on the podium, but all the hardship and all the trial and error, all the losses, I call them loser sandwiches. I've had quite a few, more than I'd like. But you learn to really understand those things, accept them, and kind of learn what winning is, because you have to learn how to win. I will say that you can, some people just go out there and win. Well, you can do it once, but doing it over and over, that's the entire goal.
Yeah.
So one of the biggest thing is, and my coworker Glenn talks about this. He's like, well, winning's fun and losing sucks. Well, how do you win? Well, you go out there and you just beat everybody. So people can tell you how to win, but you yourself, you have to learn how to win. And I think that just constantly evolves as you shoot, especially with changing disciplines. So I've been going through that, and I always still try to, you know, learn about winning and see what I can do.
Castellani shooting vests are manufactured in Italy and internationally recognized by elite shooters as the most popular lightweight shooting vests on the market. Castellani vests are especially known for their Italian styling and superior craftsmanship and quality, making them a vest of choice for all shooting disciplines. Ultimate Shooting Accessories is the exclusive supplier of Castellani vests in the United States. Visit ultimateshootingaccessories.com for more information and to place your order.
Talking about bettering yourself, you're now shooting. You've shot a Krieghoff for as long as I've known you, but you're now.
I've been shooting a Krieghoff for 11 years.
Tell me the progression into the parkour. What did you shoot before the parkour?
Oh, I've shot them all. Okay. I started with a 30-inch standard sporter. And then at the time, actually, around 2010, I was shooting quite a bit of double trap. And then I actually had they call it an ACS, but it was a pro sporter. I shot a Krieghoff pro sporter, which is a high rib. I enjoyed it. I did not enjoy it on chandelles and curling targets on sporting. Mm-hmm. Then I went back to a standard sporter, and I actually switched to a parkour. I want to say in 2012, I switched to a parkour, 2012-13. And just here recently, matter of fact, in San Antonio, I switched to the parkour X barrel, and I had a reason for doing it. Mm-hmm. Would you like me to continue?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'm listening.
So I've been shooting the parkour X barrels right after NSCA Nationals. I had a full trap set up at Nationals that I shot, and they were not parkour barrels. As soon as I got back, I had Tim Ward, DuPont Krieghoff's gunsmith, fit them to my gun. And what I found was I shot a normal parkour, and it's a good barrel. And it's well made, but an issue I found, and it's not a flaw, it's just personal preference. It has a very narrow rib, and it didn't have a lot of barrel weight. They were light barrels. I think my barrels were like 1.44 kilograms, if people were into that. But what I was looking for, and what I noticed in Bunker Trap, for, you know, listeners that don't know, you don't know where the target's going. You know, it's a left, a right, or a straightaway, and they vary on 45-degree angles to 1.5 to 3 meters high. But you don't know where it's going. It's just going fast, far, and away from you very quickly. So I was looking for more barrel awareness. You know, if you can think back, a lot of Perazzi's, a lot of Browning Broadways and stuff had very wide, I want to say 10, 11-millimeter ribs all the way down. Mm-hmm. So what that allows you to do is when you're shooting and looking at a target, you can actually peripherally see that black plane and where your barrel's at all time. Well, the best way to not look at the barrel is to know where the barrel is at all times peripherally. You know, good shooters, they will tell you that. They're peripherally aware of the barrel at all times. Well, the issue is, in a game where you don't know where the target's coming from, it's very easy to have your gun speed moving so quickly that you lose the barrel, if that makes sense.
Right.
You're just looking at the target, and the gun comes through your vision so quickly, you really don't know where it is. So by switching to the Parkour X barrel, I accomplished that. I got a little bit wider ribbed, so now I have the barrel awareness that I was looking for. Secondly, I like the weight. It's like 1.56 kilograms. It's a little heavier weight, and I just move it better for me. It's a heavier barrel. It moves better. But also, one of my favorite things is they change the rib. It still has a slight taper on the front, but if you look down it and you mounted the mounted the barrel on a receiver, you really could not tell that it was not a flat rib. And that was, you know, my biggest thing is I just want to see a flat, you know, peripheral black plane when I'm shooting a target because I want to be aware of my barrel. And I think they did a very well job making the Parkour X.
Yeah. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but the Parkour X's, they come choked and not choked, correct?
I want to say you're correct. Yeah, I would have to say that's the reason. My barrels are choked. I've been shooting full, extra full. But I do think you can get them in, you know, standard fixed barrels like the old Parkour.
Or do you have them ported?
I do not. I'm getting around to that. But I literally got the barrels. I put them on my gun and I immediately started training with them because we have a match coming up. But I am an advocate for porting.
Yeah, I know your other ones had it. And that's why I was asking you that.
Yep. I haven't got around to it, but when I can, I will.
So do you think that the Parkour X barrels will benefit you in sporting also?
I do, because it accomplishes the same exact thing. I have the barrel awareness that I was looking for, and I move the weight better. So the problem is, with a light gun, it's easier to get where you want it to go. Well, the problem is you can over manipulate it. So you can actually, you know, go offline, flick lead in front of a target quickly, and you shoot in front to where these balance, and I personally move them a lot better. I like how they point, but more importantly, I like when I look at a target, I like basically the eye-barrel relationship.
Don't you mount your gun real high up in your shoulder?
Well, I'm a trap shooter, Justin. Everybody knows that. I do. No, I used to get made fun of so bad about that from Kevin and Matt Fisher. I do. I mount my gun high, which I guess is a proper gun mount.
Yeah.
The Georgia mount low, where you mount on the bottom of your pec. But yeah, that's a nice way to say it. But yes, I do. I mount my gun pretty high on my shoulder.
Yeah. So you're talking about change. Everything's changing for you, it seems like. Your gun's changing. The weather's changing. And you've changed. You bought a new house. You're changing ammunition in the Army. Tell me about that as far as the Army is making big moves in ammunition. So tell me what you'll be shooting.
So the Army, it works through government contracting like anything. And again, I'm not in charge of this, but this is just how it works, and everybody knows this. We used to shoot federal papers for the longest time. Well, at a time, and it was about 5-6 years ago, federals, maybe longer, stopped making papers. So we actually switched to Fiocchi, the USA plant, and we just government contracted had ammo from them. And they're fine shells. But how the contracting fell this next time, we're actually switching to Winchester AAs. I personally, competing and shooting double A's, I think it's one of the best shells you can get. But everybody's looking forward to it. Double A has, you know, did a lot for the sport. You know, a lot of guys, I have not being involved in sporting as much as I was, but I've seen, you know, what they've did. So I'm excited to be shooting double A's again and competing with double A's.
And what tell everyone that's listening what load it is that you have to shoot.
So in international games, you have to shoot 24 grams. So for people that don't know, that's actually maybe 7 or 8 pellets less than a 7/8 ounce, which is a 20 gauge load. So it's called a 24 gram shell. Approximately, they're anywhere between 1325 to some of them in Europe are 1375 feet per second. But we're shooting a 24 gram load. And then for trap shooters, we'll shoot 7.5s. And then, you know, for international skeet shooters, they're shooting 9s.
Yeah. So when you're practicing, the guys on the marksmanship unit, they don't have to worry about running out of ammo. Am I right?
So that is correct. I tried very, very hard the first few days I was there, but it does not run out. And then I get the old fashioned joke where people are like, I pay your salary and I do that. Well, I pay taxes just like everybody else, state and federal.
Yeah.
But no, we have plenty of ammo and our job is to shoot it and win and secure medals and, you know, connect America's Army with America's people. So we do not run out of ammo for the most part.
That was Eisenhower's vision, wasn't it? He wanted to win.
It was.
Yeah. So talk about your house. You just bought a new house. You took on the responsibility of keeping up with that. And I think you're coming into a promotion.
I am. So there's a lot of good stuff going on. So I've owned this house for, I wouldn't say about 6 months. But no, I bought a house. It's perfect for me. You know, I have a carport. I actually have a barn in the back. I have a lot of workout equipment set up. I'm very happy to have a house. Throughout the years, I've kind of, you know, bounced around, lived in the barracks for a period of time, and then, you know, lived some other places. But now I have a place to call my own. I have a home. Very excited about it. I didn't enjoy home decor, as people call it, and furniture. But all that's out of the way. And then you're talking about the promotion. I do. January 1, so coming up, I will be promoted to a staff sergeant.
And what's that do for you?
So, well, it's a little more pay, obviously, but more responsibility. So that is called a, for people that know this, but it's a non-commissioned officer. So you're an E6 on the level of enlisted Army ranks. Mm-hmm. More money, but more importantly, you know, more responsibility, because the shooting thing is great. And I do. I'm a shooter at heart. But what's really interesting and what's awesome is you get to be a soldier on top of being a shooter. So, you know, being able to, I want to say lead, but also develop people to have, you know, to use their potential to be as good as they can. That's a really, it's a really cool thing. So that's what everybody in my office and kind of in the Army, that's how it works. You want to develop people to be the best they can below you.
Yep. All right, man. Well, I really enjoyed talking to you, learning about what you're doing. And I think you're doing good from what you're telling me. And, you know, I wish nothing but the best for you. So what sporting event will you be at next?
As far as sporting clay goes, I will be shooting bunker trap in January. Probably the Florida tournaments at the beginning of the year. I know we have Gator Cup, we have Seminole Cup. I haven't researched it heavily, but I do know there's maybe a Jack Lynx jerky tournament at mm-hmm. Quail Creek, supposed to be a really good shoot. So I will have to kind of fill in my calendar as the year kicks off, but if I can swing them, Seminole Cup, Gator Cup, I'll probably be down at Quail Creek, as many as I can swing, to be honest with you.
Well, let me tell you, if you hadn't signed up for Quail Creek and you haven't signed up for the Gator Cup, you're going to be on a waiting list, so you need to go ahead and do it.
Well, if you see me there with a book bag walking to my station, last rotation or 8 a.m. rotation, I made it in.
You know, I was shooting Florida Challenge one year, and I was on a station shooting, and I looked up, and you're walking with your book bag from station to station. So I guess it's going to be the same way, huh?
Yeah, nothing's really changed. I mean, nothing's really changed, to be honest. I mean, it's free working out, but more importantly, that's not paying for a golf cart.
That's right.
But yeah, no, if I'm there, I'll generally be walking with a book bag nowadays.
All right. Well, Will, thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate your time and look forward to seeing you.
No, I've really enjoyed it. And thank you for having me on. It sounds like, you know, everything's going good with you, and, you know, wish you the best.
All right, man. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Bye.